But what you're outlining seems like a fairly elaborate kind of suicide.
What happened? I should have known what I was doing. I should not have gone there. I really expected to meet my disaster or my end somewhere. Oh. Well, as people have said to me, if you don't want to live, why don't you do something about it?
Anne Gash, a woman who sailed a plywood boat around the world. The only way to live in retirement, according to her. Hello, Anne Jones here with Off Track on RN, with two stories that could almost come out of a boys' and girls' own adventure manual. Those who sail have a unique and very personal connection to their vessel that those who don't sail find very hard to fathom. They love it, they talk to it, they refer to it as a person. But it's not like a car, it's almost a biological connection, more tinged with life and death. Let me tell you a story. It starts in a shed, boiling in the summer sun, in Adelaide 35 years ago. A man called Michael Rossiter has an idea that he might build a boat. So he moulds the hull over many layers of steel mesh and concrete composite. Now this makes for a sturdy hull, but a damn heavy boat. It ends up being about 18 tonnes displacement. It took him 30 years to finish the boat, and he christened it Athena. Which brings us to Australia Day weekend, 2012. Rossiter set sail in his concrete yacht from the Royal South Australian Yacht Squadron in Adelaide to head to Stansbury, a small fishing town up the Gulf St Vincent. Rossiter himself can take over from here, followed closely by fellow Yacht Squadron member Dwayne Turpin. And then, as the weather closes in, you'll find out who saves who.
On Friday, we had a slow start across the Gulf and we lost time due to very little wind, but we later picked it up and made good progress. At the Stansbury end, there's a light beacon which marks the northern end of the sand spit. We gave this a wide berth to port before turning southerly into the Stansbury jetty. We had to drop sail and motored against a strong wind all the way down to Stansbury, arriving close to dusk. We anchored just off the end of the jetty in about 3 metres of water, and I laid out 30 metres of chain. At Stansbury, the anchor holding is mostly poor, with extensive weed patches and a thin layer of sand covering a limestone substrate. I was very conscious, therefore, of the necessity to check how well we were anchored for the night. And this is a story about anchoring. Now, the weather was pleasant, with a blue sky down our side of the Gulf, that is, the Stansbury side, and cloud could be seen over the Adelaide side. At about maybe 8:15, the wind started picking up. We jumped into our rubber dinghy and headed off for Athena. As we reached Athena, we just had time to climb aboard as the first large gusts of wind hit us. I was holding the dinghy painter as the dinghy lifted its bow out of the water, but like a Concorde, and literally stood on its outboard motor. I fastened the dinghy to our starboard entry gate and left it to look after itself. We had been hit by a fresh to strong gale force wind with speeds recorded up to 42 knots.
And this front came through and it was well over 40 knots, and normally if you get a squall it lasts 5-10 minutes. After about 20 minutes, I said, we've got to get back to the boat because the seas had built up so bad that it was pretty well dangerous to get back to the boat. And we just sat in the floor of the dinghy in probably a 3 foot plus choppy swell, which was breaking, and we got back to our boat. But on the way back, we saw Michael dragging. Basically, his anchor wasn't grabbing hold of anything, it was just grabbing weed. And the more weed you get around an anchor, the less chance it's got of digging into the sand. So pretty well that's what happened. And
we received radio advice to start our diesel engine and put out to sea. I remember being in the cockpit with one hand operating the anchor winch, the other controlling the engine's throttle and ship's wheel as I attempted to steer towards the anchor and bring in the chain. It was now dark and I was not able to see. Nor was I aware that, as I wound in the anchor chain and attempted to move the boat forward, that the anchor was in fact slipping and we must have been moving backwards. All of a sudden, I looked astern and saw a black cliff looming over us.
I actually thought, well, his ear was out further than us, and I said to the others, I'm sure he'll be all right because he's on board his boat. And next thing we knew, he was pretty well on the hard and big swell, and it was just on dark.
I redoubled my efforts on the engine, but to no avail. For a moment later, we felt a Athena bumping aground. Another last burst of engine power was without effect, and the boat started to list with Athena's starboard side positioned towards the cliff. At this moment, I knew that all further efforts to recover flotation were pointless. At the same time, we saw that there was a police car now on the cliff top with its headlights shining out over the water above us.
I activated the red and blue lights of the police vehicle to alert the persons on board that police had been notified. My official name is Brevet Sergeant Wardale, officer in charge of Stansbury Police Station, but everyone knows me as Bluey. Well, I was just on normal patrol on Saturday the 28th of January, and about 7 p.m. that night, I was alerted to a vessel in distress. I went down towards the cliff face where there's a parking area, and by the time I got there, the vessel had beached itself right up against the cliffs, and they were just waiting, distressed to a degree because of the weather conditions, for help to arrive.
By now, the boat was listing to starboard so that pots and pans and other things were falling everywhere. All of a sudden, a dinghy appeared alongside Athena.
Well, initially, one of their colleagues in another vessel that was moored in Oyster Bay, he went over to this vessel, which was named Athena.
It was a colleague of ours, Dwayne Turpin of Thorfinn, who'd come to help us in dangerous sea conditions and in darkness.
There are only two other yachts and Michael's yacht. There were only four of us at the time. And I was contemplating leaving, getting out of there, because when the wind's up and you're on a lee shore, it's obviously dangerous. And I personally didn't really want to be leaving my boat on its own. I pretty well couldn't see their boat. I knew where it was, and I put a headlight on my head and told my wife to just keep an eye out for me when I was going, and I knew pretty well where they were and headed that way. There was a good chance I could have got tipped out of my dinghy, but I felt that I hopefully could have swum ashore. And so I jumped in the dinghy, and I didn't actually put any clothing on except my shorts, because I thought if I do come out of the dinghy, I'd be able to swim ashore, and I didn't want to be weighted down with wet weather gear. So I just went over in my shorts and singlet and put a life jacket on. It was pretty dark and choppy. It was pretty hairy to be out there in a dinghy and that. Probably on a scale of 1 to 10, it would have been, you know, as far as rough water and for a dinghy goes, it'd be close to a 10. And then I just sat as low and as forward as I could in my dinghy, and the waves were slamming against Michael's boat. It was up pretty well close to nearly 45 degrees, felt like, and bouncing around, and because of their age and maybe inexperience, they were all in a bit of a panic, I think. And I got on board and basically told them they had to abandon ship.
We donned our personal flotation devices and, on Dwayne's suggestion, grabbed the flares in case needed. Having done as much as we could do for Athena, we descended into the two rubber dinghies.
Basically told them to sit in the floor as low as possible, and I got them back to the boat ramp where the police were waiting for us.
And he, with his rubber ducky, got the three persons on board and conveyed them safely back to the Stansford boat ramp.
It wasn't an easy decision to make, and I've never been put in that. But, you know, I was going to head out, and I suppose you tend to play it down. But it wasn't easy for me to leave my boat at that time, but I knew that if I didn't go, there wasn't anyone else that was going to be there to help them if they needed help.
We rose at 5 a.m. the following morning to assess the situation with Athena before high tide. Athena had survived the night on her own and was where we had left her. She had a slight list still, but the tide was coming in. We got ourselves aboard as early as possible to assess the damage. I pulled up the floors and carried out a quick survey, which showed no holes and no water. I turned on the electrics and everything came on. I placed the ignition key in the lock and with some trepidation turned it. The engine started as if nothing had happened. It was now that things started to happen that I could not have imagined during the long night. Two power boats appeared as if from nowhere.
Tide was running out. That was the problem. It would have been high water between 6 and 7 o'clock. By the time we got all our gear ready, we were about 40 minutes late, and I thought, well, it didn't look good. I knew we were in trouble. Any longer than half an hour, she was all over, you know. Andrew Pisani here, commercial fisherman, Stansbury, and got a phone call 7 o'clock in the morning. So we ended up getting the vessel Courage and heading out down the boat ramp and seeing the big yacht up on the beach. And it didn't look too good. Yeah, it was laying down on the starboard side and it didn't look too flash. I thought we have to try to roll it right over to get the keel off up off the bottom and try to run it on its belly. I was quite shocked. I didn't think we were going to get it off at all. I thought she was there to stay there, but I was quite surprised because in that area there's a lot of rocks and it didn't look good because with that wind over that night from the east blowing that yacht up on the beach, I thought she would have been pretty well scathed.
A very substantial tow rope was passed from Skeet Pisani on his powerful boat Courage.
It's a 32-foot Clayton and it's a big snapper boat. It's got two big outboards on the back, so it's 350 horsepower. So what we done was throw a massive tow line,
which was taken by Dwayne through our fair lead on the front of the boat and onto Athena's equally substantial bow cleat. Courage worked and pulled Athena's bow to a point away from the cliff. But she was still hard and fast.
There's a big boulder just down there in the water. It's about 200 metres off the low water mark. It was inside that there, and the water was just a bit higher than what it is now. And she was very high and dry. Another hour on the ebb tide, it would have been in a lot of trouble. Because the water goes out to like dry. All that, where that weed line is there, that'll be dry in the next hour or so. But the spit that runs right out there, out of the Black Beacon, that's all dry.
Turned around, but it wouldn't budge after that. And I said, mate, you realise it's over 20 tonne. And he said, oh, it's concrete. I'm like, yeah, you're not going to pull it off like that.
When I heard it was cement, I thought, well, here we go. But it's what it was. Like, the back of the boat was high and dry, virtually up on the rocks. So we ended up getting the another boat, a smaller vessel, and tying a rope to the top of the mast and rolling the boat right over one side. And we just, over about 20-odd minutes, trying to pull the boat off the beach.
Using the spinnaker halyard from the top of the mast so as to lift her deep keel off the ground as Courage powered ahead.
Yeah, I was very happy the way the outboards pulled the boat off the beach. I was quite surprised at the amount of grunt, the amount of horsepower it really give it, because it was a fair bit of... I had to really give them as much as I could to get it off.
Awesome. It was probably better than the drags, listening to Courage. It's awesome.
Suddenly I felt a rumble underfoot and Athena was being dragged off the ground and back into deep water. All of a sudden she was afloat. A lone observer up on the cliff could be heard to cheer and clap, as did we.
When the boat came free, I was very surprised. It just overcome. As soon as we got under that metre and a half of water, it was just, yeah, your heart was just, thank God for that. It was great, you know what I mean? And I think the bloke who owned the boat, he was pretty relaxed after once it all got off.
And especially with the assistance of the local fisherman, Andrew Pisani, retrieving the boat in the morning, it all ended up... very good, and they sailed off into the sunrise back towards Adelaide.
I didn't realise, talking to the bloke a few days later, that he ended up building that boat over 30 years by himself. So fair bit of effort what he's done. So he's definitely his pride and joy. To see on his face was just unreal. You know, he was very, very worried. When I got there, it was like, yeah, it was. He couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it at all.
Andrew Pisani, a commercial fisherman from Stansbury with a powerful boat called Courage, finishing off this episode's first adventure.